So good morning, good afternoon, good evening to all of our listeners all over the world. I'm Barry Muller, your host for the Revamp Podcast. Today I have Henrique, the EVP of Sales at Ultimate. Henrique and I have been in touch, and I would say since I joined DealHub, while he was working at G2, he was the GM, the VP and GM of EMEA G2. And if our listeners have ever seen us on social media, DealHub loves G2, and we're big fans. So we also are big fans of Henrique. So really an honor for me to have Henrique on this podcast. And I think our listeners, you guys will also enjoy this podcast because Henrique is filled with different insights from all of his experience. Besides for G2, Henrique has worked at Salesforce and Accenture. But Henrique, I'll let you tell us a little bit more about yourself and where you are currently the EVP of Sales at Ultimate.
Thanks, Barry. It's a very, very happy to be here. Love the podcast and big fan of DealHub as well. So yeah, I'm originally from Brazil, worked in enterprise software for the last 15 years, primarily in sales. You mentioned Accenture and Salesforce. I've been through those two companies via acquisition, so it's been an interesting journey. So I landed at Accenture and after an acquisition and was managing sales teams there to a little bit over about 20 million in revenue. And then another product company that got acquired by Salesforce, where I had the experience of building teams across the EMEA region. And that was a really fun ride. We grew a business from nothing in Europe to over 100 million in ARR over 3 years. So that was really cool. And then most recently, yes, I've been at G2. I am a software geek, I guess. I'm sort of really into B2B software. I think I have a very strong entrepreneurial itch that I keep scratching, but I've yet to found my own business, but hopefully that will happen in due course. And at G2, I had an opportunity to work with amazing companies. And what really stood out for me was, you know, running G2 in Europe, just the amount of amazing B2B SaaS companies coming out of Europe. And I got to work with companies like DealHub and many others who are now world leaders in their categories, which is really, really cool. And I think, you know, 6 years ago, I wouldn't be sat here talking about European SaaS companies the way that we are today, which is why I just took the plunge and joined Ultimate back in November to head up our global sales org, and have been having a great time ever since.
That's great. Really interesting to hear. I actually didn't realize that that's how you joined Accenture and Salesforce. That's a good story. Maybe we'll get to that later in the podcast, some more background on that. But to begin off this podcast, I think something that we were discussing right before we pressed the record button, but something that's been on my mind, something that's been on your mind for the past, even definitely caused by COVID, but maybe even before COVID started, is really how buying has changed. And not just the B2C experience, but also the B2B buying experience. This is a very broad topic, and we can take this a few different ways, but I'm going to let you start the way you want to take it. I know that at G2, for example, that's a trend that's been talked about. And I understand that this is something that you think about even in your free time. So Henrique, let's start. How has buying changed?
So we're talking specifically about B2B software buying, right? And, I joined Ultimate primarily because I saw this huge acceleration of, you know, digitized ways of interacting, right? Whether you're in a B2C environment and, you know, all of a sudden, all of retail has gone from bricks and mortars to digital, right? And similarly, we're seeing the same in B2B. The world that we operate in, we help customer support teams. So we're helping customer support teams save millions in scaling costs for customer support functions. If you think about any company who deals with customers, whether in B2B or in B2C today, all of a sudden they're thinking, okay, I'm not tied physically to any one location anymore, right? So whether it's less people that they need to hire to scale, whether it's reducing costs for outsourced teams, or rather it's even freeing up existing teams to do more high value and meaningful work. I think the last couple of years has really accelerated digitization. So whereas Ultimate are focused on providing what we call virtual agents for customer support teams. I think when we think about the impacts of this on B2B selling, there are really strong ramifications, right? So what's happened? So I think ever since I was at G2, it became really clear to me that the whole B2B buyer experience has changed, right? And the way people buy B2B software has caused us as well to rethink our approach around sales and marketing. And interestingly as well, in the past, companies would be, you know, adopting either one strategy or another strategy. So they might be doing just inbound or just outbound, right, as a way of going to market. So they, or they might be doing account-based marketing, or they might be a product-led growth business, right? Whereas today, what we're seeing is companies doing one thing and another, right? And I think they're doing this because they're realizing that in order to improve the experience for buyers, they need to offer choices, right? They need to offer choices in terms of how you buy, how you contact us. And again, whether it's in B2C, you know, that you can't rock up to a shop anymore and process an exchange, but you want to be able to send them a text message, or you want to be able to do a chat online, or just send an email, whatever it is that you're into, right? People want choices. And in B2B selling, I think it's the same. So as a result of this, I think it's really interesting, right? 5 years ago, you would have laughed if you turned on the TV and you started seeing on primetime television, TV ads for Adobe, Salesforce, right? Like, why are those companies like spending huge amounts of money on TV ads, right? What happened to like hyper-targeted, personalized, you know, or account-based marketing at scale, right? Well, the funny thing is those companies are all still doing that stuff. But I think what we're seeing more of is the and, right? We'll do this and we'll do something else. And so here in Europe and in the US, you know, we're seeing enterprise companies adopt product-led growth go-to-market motions, right? Which traditionally we would have thought of as, you know, small businesses starting out, no sales team, they go PLG, right? And so I just think it's really interesting in terms of how the way people are buying is being picked up now in B2B. And they're adopting these, you know, when you think about PLG, you think about growth marketing, all of this was like bringing B2C tactics into the B2B world, right? The same way we're now seeing Adobe and Salesforce doing TV ads, right? We are seeing B2B adopting more B2C plays. And I think it's just a realization that in the end of the day, you're selling to a person, right? And that person is on YouTube, they're on Facebook, right? They're not just reading Gartner reports, right? Or logging onto G2. And so I just really think, I think this is really encouraging us as well to think about our teams and how we make the sales experience better. Because the way of selling of like 10 years ago, where we have our structured sales process, and Barry, I don't care, you know, where you've been online or how you've been interacting with my brand, let me tell you, the first thing we will do is a discovery call, right? That is like, that, those days are dead. And so sales leaders and salespeople need to really rethink about how they're approaching customers and the whole buying process.
Yeah, I think there's a few interesting points. I even was writing them down. So one, I wanted to point out that you talked about 5 years, not 2 years. So I think that's also interesting. 2 years obviously implying the COVID ramifications, and 5 years implying more of the, I would say, B2C to B2B recognition that people are people and organizations, even if you're talking to a corporate, you're talking to a person, which is happened before COVID, right? That trend started, but it was accelerated, I guess, through COVID, that digitization. The next piece I wanted to point was also how you talked about the buying experience change, but also the selling experience has changed in multiple ways. One, we're talking about processes. We're also talking about attacking, not to use an intense word, I guess, but attacking in, the customer in multiple ways through different channels, which is, I guess, was more of a B2C play and now is a B2B play. Let's talk more about that. Did the extra channels come because buyers were interested, because buyers needed that? Or did the extra channels come like going from PLG to enterprise because the B2B companies were just looking for new ways to make money? Is it, who was the person initiating? Who was the initiator? Was it the company or was it the buyer forcing the company to do that?
I mean, when I think about it, I think it's both, right? So I think it's both buyers now are a lot more proactive about educating themselves, guiding themselves through a purchasing process than they were before. And it is a bit chicken and egg, right? Because there's a lot more information being pushed out in multiple channels online by vendors as well. But equally, it's also about vendors, as you said, going to channels that they thought originally, or maybe 5 years ago, were not, or 2 years ago, were not B2B channels, right? Like, I don't know about you, but when I go onto YouTube, I start seeing a bunch of B2B software ads in front of me,
right?
And those ads have nothing to do with what I'm looking up on YouTube, right? I might be looking at a drone video and I'm getting a project management B2B software ad popping up beforehand, right? So there's a lot of push as well from brands and these channels, which I think is really smart. But fundamentally, I do believe that, you know, the sales team, because of this, is no longer the revenue owner, right? I mean, I think HubSpot popularized the concept that the funnel is now a flywheel, right? Mm-hmm. What does that mean, right? It means not only that a customer doesn't start at the top of a funnel and finishes at the bottom, but your customer is actually engaging with you at multiple stages of their life cycle, from initial purchase through to adoption, through to through to post-adoption into expansion and so on, right? Into and this is a vicious cycle. But also, your buyers are coming in at any stage of your funnel, and what that means is that you have different teams now that impact that buyer journey, right? There's no more just direct sales channel, right? As you said, you know, product marketing teams, growth teams, PLG teams, ABM teams, sales, customer success, sales development, right? The whole revenue piece has been disintermediated. Let me just pause and reset my camera a second. There we go. So the whole revenue piece has been disintermediated and decentralized across these multiple teams. And so it causes us to rethink what different teams should be doing and also how success should be measured, right? Marketing, BDRs, SDRs, customer success, acquisition, account management. And I think the best sales teams are adapting the ways in which they work, but also the organizational structures that they have in order to get ahead in the market. Here at Ultimate, this applies not just how teams are set up, but also for us, it applies very much in terms of how we structure our pricing. But here at Ultimate, you know, we used to front load a lot of the cost of the contract up front, right? And because customers are now a lot more educated in terms of how do other companies sell, how do other people buy, you know, there has been a big push in the market now away from, you know, annual upfront subscriptions and more usage-based, value-based pricing, right? And so we're really like rethinking not just how we sell, but also how we price and package. And this is all down to how this whole revenue process, but also the buying behaviors have been completely decentralized over the last few years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You brought up again a lot of interesting points. I want to focus on the, I'm trying to figure out which place to focus on. There's so many avenues we could go. The idea of, let's talk about who should be, if there's sales and then there's marketing, who is it the CRO that's working on aligning it to make sure that they're getting leads? Is it the CEO, like making the move to usage-based pricing, from subscription pricing? Like whose role is that? Is it the RevOps person that was hired that was doing a lot of Salesforce things and now they have more time to do more strategic things?
Yeah. Well, I think what this causes in a lot of companies now is that there's never been a bigger priority than cross-functional alignment, right? You know, we've been talking for years about how, you know, when you think about pipeline, okay, who owns pipeline, right? Is it sales? Is it marketing? Is it business development? The reality is, it's everyone, right? Everyone should have an accountability for pipeline, but everyone should be also targeted and rewarded on revenue, right? I think the days in which customer success, for example, targeted purely on renewal rates and NPS are gone, right? I think customer success is now becoming a revenue driver, and we're seeing more and more customer success leaders targeted on revenue as well. Within sales, you've got, you know, as you grow your business, you've got the ability to specialize your sales teams as well into, you know, acquisition teams and account management and growth teams. When you look at the, so I'm going to pause again. There we go. When you look at the longer tail of the market, so smaller customers now, we're seeing marketing taking a much bigger share of responsibility for driving revenue in the whole self-service piece, right? The longer tail of the market alongside product. And so it's very hard to say that a chief revenue officer should have product, marketing, customer success, sales development, all reporting into them, right? Well, actually, we need to recognize that nowadays revenue is so disintermediated that what you really need is a really strong, small group of senior leaders who are incentivized and targeted around revenue and working in very close alignment together. And that's the move that we're shifting to at Ultimate, and I'm seeing in a lot of companies as well.
Yep. Yeah, I definitely have seen that a lot. And that's one of the reasons for the podcast, right? Is that we focus on CROs and operations professionals and also sales leaders who have that, the grasp of not just looking at sales and viewing sales as a classic B2B sales, but that sales is much deeper. So let's talk about sales teams. Here's something that came up. PLG, product-led growth, if you're selling a product that is less for less money in the beginning, then the sales, I guess, reps are less incentivized or incentivized different. Let me restart. Should sales reps that sell product-led growth companies be incentivized differently than other companies? And I'll tell you the background of this. One of the philosophies of product-led growth is that you get in early and then you land, and then you expand. So in theory, you could land for a $2,000 contract and your goal is to get them to buy a $50,000 contract by year one or by year two. And since they have brand affinity, they'll actually more likely to buy it than just reaching to them on just YouTube ads and just TV ads and et cetera. What's your take on this for sales teams and the product-led growth space?
So I think it's really interesting with PLG because everyone wants to get in on it, right? Everyone wants to reduce their cost of acquisition, and that's why they find PLG attractive, right? Everyone understands that selling incremental revenue or expansion revenue is 3 to 4 times cheaper than selling the initial deal. And so the whole concept of land and expand makes sense. And the least that you can spend on acquiring customer, the more your unit economics are going to look good, right? When you look at it in the long run. The challenge with PLG is that you're making a big bet as a company on the value of your solution, right? Because PLG is all about giving people the product either for free or for a very low initial cost, helping them see the value, and then capitalizing on that value further down the line rather than up front. And I think a lot of the challenges that we have over the last few years is, you know, and again, I was at G2 for 3 years and I've been seeing how many tech companies are popping up in how many categories. I mean, I'll be honest with you, Barry, there's a lot of questionable tech out there which have benefited from a lot of liquidity in the market and has allowed companies to launch products that in many other economic environments, you know, would not have thrived. And then they want to go and try and do PLG, right? And these are companies that are trying to do PLG where the adoption rate of their products are like 10% of users using it or something like that, right? So you've got to be very careful. Mm-hmm. And what does that mean for sales teams? Well, if you have a product where you can tie the unit of value of what you charge people for, right, to usage and value rather than number of licenses, for example.
Yep.
Then I think, you know, you're setting yourself up for success, right? So that's the first thing. When you look at the sales teams, I don't see any issue with reducing the upfront spend if you've got the confidence that you've got a strong customer success process and support for your customers, right? I would much rather incentivize our reps to start small and achieve more in the first 12 months than to sell a super discounted deal up front where value is yet to be proven and realize that we could have delivered a lot more of that value and charged our customers a lot more for it. And so we're actually, you know, in our comp plans here at Ultimate, we have, as I was saying, shifted a lot more from seeking money up front to actually realizing that over the first 12 months. And that's largely down to the fact that our product is completely priced based on the value that you get out of it rather than how many people are signed up for it, for example. Mm-hmm. But that does mean that we have to think about how that comp plan looks like and what kind of behaviors we want to incentivize and enable our teams on engaging with customers, right? And also, how does that challenge you in terms of thinking of acquisition teams and account management teams, mm-hmm. right? So some companies will say, okay, for the first 6 months post-signature or the first 12 months post-signature, the account executive is still driving the growth of that account, right? Mm-hmm. Alongside the customer success team, for example. It's a pure handoff and their compensation is all based on how many new logos they bring in mm-hmm. rather than how much those new customers are paying us. So you really have to start to think about how you're incentivizing those teams and what kind of behaviors you want to drive. For us, for now, it's been a case of, you know what, we're just going to pay you on anything within that account within the first 12 months, mm-hmm. right? And it's in your interest to maximize how much value and therefore revenue that account brings to the business.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Whereas previously, it was a case of you sell the first deal, you don't get paid on anything after that, right? So it's really causing us to rethink how we set up our teams, but then also how do we structure their comp.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, it's... I'm sure that that's something to look up every so often is see where are people going. It also forces the sales team to have a lot more trust in the customer success account manager team because they're relying on them right now versus just relying on marketing. Now it's that more aligned on buying, which also adds pressure, but also adds more revenue if it works.
And it de-risks our revenue growth, right? Because we don't want to be selling stuff up front that we then can't realize the value on and have a potential churn or downgrade on our hands 12 months down the line, right? Again, if you're building a great product and you're giving your customers the best possible support to make the most out of it, then you should have no issues with protecting your downside and increasing your upside and really locking in future revenue growth that way rather than selling a bunch of stuff up front and then racing against the clock to try and make sure that most of that gets used up and the value gets realized.
Right. Yeah. No, absolutely. 100%. When I was one other thing about product led growth, which is cool. At Wix, I worked at Wix for listeners. Oh, yeah. So there's two aspects. One, we could talk about the bottom up and then we could also talk to top to bottom. But one aspect that was really interesting, the YouTube ads, since we had a free product, but also a paid product, we were able to evaluate how effective the YouTube ads were by just how much people were paying on it on day one. So it's one, you'll get a percentage of your users to that are going to come in free, a large percentage. The majority of the users are going to come in free, but you're over time, since we spent so much money on YouTube ads, they can actually understand what is our benchmark, what is the number that we want to hit of people that are paying on the day that they see that YouTube ad. And then they would, and that was like the number that they were going off versus a B2B company that doesn't have the product led growth or doesn't have a thing that someone can pay for that day on a computer. YouTube ads become more of a mystery box, kind of like how TV is.
Yeah. Is it influencing, right? Is it influencing a deal or is it?
Right. Like, yeah, exactly. So you have to be more creative with it. You can look for brand searches. You can look for website traffic.
Yeah.
And
it's the challenge of attribution, right? In B2B,
right.
Which is the bane of marketers' existence of the last few years, right?
Mm-hmm. Exactly. So it's product-led growth actually makes the pain of attribution more smooth and easier actually to understand. Wix used to do Super Bowl ads, and then they stopped because they just brought it, they really brought it down to science. The YouTube ad
space. Like a badge of honor, right? I'm gonna have my Super Bowl ad, or I'm gonna have the was it the 405 freeway in San Francisco, or I'm gonna have the billboard on the 405.
Right. Yeah, exactly. But then what you're saying, then people are also trying to hit multiple channels, because that's, you know, people are in different places and the influence does affect you. But then the attribution becomes more clouded. But that's what I like about, that's one thing I like about product-led growth. It helps refine the attribution a bit more. On the flip side, the product-led growth, Wix was product-led growth before product-led growth was cool. It was before, it used to be called freemium, at least in that aspect. But yeah. They were bringing, one of my actually even initiatives there with the team was to look at how can we help sell a new enterprise package, which was a really fun thing. So one of the methodologies was just going to see how many, just looking at email addresses and seeing how many companies have the same domain name, right? Like at blank, blank, blank. And then think of, yeah. And then go the opposite way. Oh, the real estate.
So the enterprise motion, kind of like the box model, right? That Aaron Levy pioneered, right?
Yeah, exactly. So exactly like that. So it sounds, sometimes when we talk about it, it sounds new, but this box has been IPO'd for some time. But now everyone's doing it. So that's why I guess is a bit more newer, because everyone's talking about product-led growth. The buyers are becoming more aware, at least in the B2B space, about this idea of product-led growth. And that's also, we were talking about this before, is that the buyers, the sellers, the chicken and the egg, buyers now expect even product-led growth, I think. And I'm curious to hear what you think, because they see all these other companies doing product-led growth and they're like, oh, I want it for free. I want to try it out. Oh, I want to be able to access this. And that's, in essence, changed how they buy, not because of COVID, not because of what we were saying before about choices. It's about just that's what they're used to, even for B2B buying the past few, even year, I would say.
Yeah, and what you've got to remember as well is, again, we can label it PLG, we can label it whatever we want, but with the acceleration of the informed B2B buyer in the digital world, right, where they are educating themselves so much about your product and 20 others in ways that they would never be able to, right, a while back, what we're seeing is there's a big drive around self-service, right? Like, I should be able to find out what I need, get the answers I want, and then start using this and figuring out if it's any good, right? I shouldn't have to speak to a salesperson. And you know, as a leader of a sales team, that makes me kind of question, you know, what are we here for, right? Because we're seeing these kind of motions, not just in SMB and mid-market, we're seeing this in enterprise as well. Now, granted, in enterprise you get into then, you know, when the company is serious about doing this at scale, you know, customization, implementation, security reviews, right? And that's where the enterprise sales motion really kicks in. But it does really cause us to question, you know, when you do finally speak to a prospect, or when a prospect finally speaks to a salesperson, how is that conversation different today, right? I bet, you know, I will tell you it is significantly different. Because if you rock up to that conversation, as I was saying earlier, with your discovery guide, thinking it's an initial conversation and your prospect is 10 steps ahead of you, it's not going to go well, right? So you have to be asking yourself, and I know you want to talk a little bit about tech, but what tech do I have access to that helps me understand where this buyer is in their journey, right? Mm-hmm. What have they had access to? Who have they spoken to? What have they consumed? And if I'm lucky enough to get some time with them during a sales cycle, how can I add real value, right? Yeah. How can I make sure that they will remember this interaction and not the interaction that they're having with 20 other vendors, right? Yeah. Because guess what? They're not waiting for people to rock up in their office anymore. They're having 20 Zoom calls a day now, right? And so, you know, as a salesperson, you have to do your research. But when I say do your research, I don't mean go on their website and search Google News. I actually leverage technology that helps you understand where they are in their purchasing cycle. But then plan and execute flawlessly when you get one-on-one time. If you just follow your playbook, you're not going to make progress, right? You're not going to have two-hour meetings anymore or one-hour demos. your window of opportunity is much smaller. You got to come prepared. You got to know your market. You got to know your client, and you've got to make a lasting impression, right? And so I think that's really caused us to rethink, okay, let's help. Let's try and define when we engage with a customer, where are they? And therefore, how should we engage, right? One of the things that we realized was because we weren't doing this, right? We have a fantastic product, right? I came from G2. I had access to a lot of data. I joined Ultimate because it's the best. We're the best at what we do, right? We're number one globally in our category as well, like Deal Hub. And what I was surprised when I joined was our win rate was quite low, Barry, right? So it was like about 15 percentage points lower than what I would, or 10 percentage points lower than what I would wanted or expected to be. And as you know, that has big implications for pipeline generation and pipeline goals. And it's just, you know, you need to sort out your win rate if you're going to scale revenue. And I was like, how is that possible? And when I looked at the numbers, I noticed that actually when we're in a competitive deal, our win rate is like, we win 3 out of 4 deals, like 75%. So what we were doing is when we're in the right deal with the right buyer at the right stage, we're knocking it out of the park. And there's a lot of clarity for us, what's going on, where is the buyer, what do they need? But when we're going in blind, because you know what, you look like a buyer, you're in the right industry, you may or may not be in the market for what we do right now, like we were wasting so much resource and so much time. And so it just dawned upon me that it's all down to how this buyer behavior is changing, the self-service element. And if you are tapping into and understanding where they're at, you can be really selective about how you spend your time and ensure that you're not wasting resources and time. And I think that's really important for us to acknowledge as sales and revenue leaders.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. We were talking about prioritization, right? So prioritization for your team. So with that knowledge, then, does that mean that your team, were you trying to shift them to move to stop talking to customers that weren't interested in or that weren't looking at competitors? Or were you asking them to ask in the beginning if they were looking at competitors and kind of like guide them into the buying process of that? Like, what did you do with that information? Or did you stop talking to those people completely, or you gave them to specific sales reps that might be better at those type of conversations? What's the action item with that information?
I think that if as a revenue organization across sales and marketing, you're still operating on the basis of, okay, it's a lead because they've racked up these points, or they've downloaded 2 white papers and attended a webinar. If you're operating that way, you're still handing over target leads and accounts into sales too early, right? And I think, again, because now buyers leave so many breadcrumbs and they're also open about where they're at, we need to stop being naive and thinking that every customer needs to go through our sales process and actually understand, okay, are they an ideal customer profile? Do you have a challenge that we can help? But actually, are they in the market? Are they ready to buy right now? And sometimes you do need to engineer that, and you will engineer that based on your understanding of that company, their business priorities, and what matters to them right now. But that's going to be the minority of cases for salespeople. In the majority of cases, you're just going to match where they're at, right? You're going to match where they're at. And in most cases, these leads that are coming over without that information, you are going to be wasting your time and your resources. And so that's really the change for us. And it's not a case of, hey, are you talking to one of our competitors? If you are, great, let's talk, right? But it's actually, let's understand if, despite the fact that we can help you, is now the right time for you to buy, right? And I think that that's what's missing. And you can use technology to help you with that, but you can also use a new approach to engaging with your customers that respects the fact that customers will show signs of potentially benefiting from your solution much sooner that now than before, because before they weren't engaging digitally as much as they are today. And so you're getting all these false positives today that you should be targeting them and engaging them, when in fact they're nowhere near ready to start engaging with you in demos, proposals, negotiations, project planning, right? So I think that's why you need to be really, really careful and really hone in on that early conversation, whether it's a deal that both of you should be in and whether it should be in your pipeline. So qualifying out earlier is, I think, become more and more important than ever because of this change in the buyer behavior.
Yeah, no, that's really interesting. One thing that I might ask you to repeat it, but you said that if you go into that first conversation and you think that they don't know what your product is or what they want, then you're like, then that's like being naive about it. Is that what you said? Something around that line.
Yeah, I think absolutely. You know, by the time you speak to a customer, they will know who you are. They'll have an idea or an impression of what you do. And the chances are they will have a pretty good guess of your main competitors as well, right? Starting that conversation, assuming that you're the holder of all this information and that you're going to bestow it upon your customer is, I think, a very naive way of engaging in B2B sales in this modern age.
I think that's brilliant.
We had a statistic at G2. We did a lot of research with buyers. And again, I know you've asked me like difference between US and Europe. One of the things that was actually common across US and Europe buyers is that 80% of the time, by the time a customer reaches out to a vendor, they've already made up their mind.
Right. Wow. Right? Yeah.
So it actually asks you know, the question of like, what happens all the other times with all the other customers that are not reaching out to you, right? They're much further along the decision-making process by the time you speak to them.
Right. No, I think it's interesting. And I think that has nothing to do with COVID. That has nothing to do with...
I think COVID has accelerated it, right?
Right.
Because, you know, I don't know about you, but I haven't been to a software conference. I think in the US now it's picking up again, but I haven't been to a live software conference, you know, where vendors are actively engaging with buyers and generating leads and so on in over 2 years.
Yeah.
Right? We know software buying hasn't slowed down, so people are going somewhere else. So they're going online, so it has accelerated.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. There's one chart that just came up in my head that I've seen, that I saw, I think it was last year, just that it talked about dating. So pretty random, but I think it actually talks to this topic that the number one way people start dating is through online apps.
Yeah.
More than matchmakers, which wasn't surprising, right? But it's also more than just friends introducing to friends. That was the part that surprised me. It was like,
yeah, I think I've seen this chart, right? And it's like, I don't know, in the 60s, it was like school and high school. And then, and then like in the noughties, that's how I met my wife. It was work, right? So it's like work was the place we met. And now it's like online. Yeah.
Right. Exactly. And then it went like 41 to 37% in the past, like, I guess, 5 years, we'll say. And I feel like, and if you know anything about online dating or know someone that's done online dating, don't just look at the person's profile on Tinder. They also look at Facebook, Instagram, and that's what they're doing with B2B companies, right? Like, again, this is the majority of daters. So then the majority of, and millennials, I think I read, are like 50%. And even if you're not millennial, this is people expect things quick and fast. But the majority of people have a practice. Okay, they have a date. Let's not stalk them, but let's check them out online. Let's see their online presence. Same with B2B. But we have to, I love that. We have to assume that they've already done this process. And we could do that pretty simply through some qualification even. It doesn't have to change everything. It just has to be, you have to be okay with that the processes are broken or they're new. So that's super interesting. Enrique, I think I could talk about this all day. So I think I'm going to stop it and we'll have to continue a different time. I really appreciate this. It really made me think about it a little bit differently. I think also for our listeners, the product-led growth conversation was also interesting. Again, that's come either the chicken or the egg. We don't know. Was it the buyer or the sellers that wanted it more? But I think that's also very relevant. And that also shows that the buying experience has caused the selling experience to change. And the selling experience then needs to, processes need to change. Are you changing the pricing? Are you changing the incentives for your own sales team? So there's a lot of ramifications for these changes, not just that, not just going digital, which is definitely step one. If you're listening and you haven't gone digital, I highly recommend it. So Enrique, thanks so much for coming on.
It's been an absolute pleasure, Barry. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. All right. We'll talk soon. Bye.